Thank you, Terry. And before we get down to the real business of this morning, on behalf of USDA and on behalf of the Foreign Agricultural Service, I want to congratulate the Grains Council on its 50th anniversary. So give yourselves a round of applause. It was very interesting to listen to Tom Doerr this morning giving a bit of a historical perspective on where we've been and where we are now and where we may be headed in the future, in part because in addition to the other things that Terry mentioned about me, I'm also the historian of the Foreign Agricultural Service. And looking back at this history, FAS was created in 1930. We were then done away with in 1939. And we were recreated in 1953 by a group of people who included some key people in creation of the Market Development Cooperator Program. We really are joined at the hip. We've been joined at the hip since the mid-1950s. And again, I appreciate, and on behalf of USDA and of FAS in particular, thank you all for your support over the years and in market development and in everything else that we do overseas. It's interesting to be in Puerto Vallarta, especially after 5 years in Russia. February in Puerto Vallarta is a little bit different from February anywhere in Russia. And about a year and a half ago, the Russian Grain Union asked me to come give a presentation at their annual conference. I said, sure, that would be fine. I'd be happy to do that. Where is it going to be? And they said, we're going to Turkey. So the Russian Grain Union had its annual meeting on the Mediterranean coast of Turkey. So then when Chris Corey called me and said, Alan, would you please come to the Grain Council annual meeting, I thought, well, gosh, you know, I have to get special permission to come up to the United States and all this because it's not in my area of responsibility. He said, no, we're coming to Puerto Vallarta, so we're going to be in Mexico. And it caused me to do a little bit of thinking. We take it for granted today. The idea of having a meeting of an organization in another country. And this was not the case 30 or 40 years ago. So again, looking at the past and looking at the future, we see that there is a blurring of national boundaries. This leads to my next point, which is movement on the part of the governments of Mexico and the government of the United States towards a competitiveness agenda that does not mean competition with each other. When you hear the government of Mexico or the government of the United States talking about competitiveness, we're talking about competitiveness of North America relative to the rest of the world. How we can integrate agriculture in Canada, the United States, and Mexico in a way that makes us as competitive as a trading bloc as other trading blocks around the world. So with that thought in mind, it gives me very great pleasure to introduce some of my very good friends from Mexico. Starting immediately on my left, Ricardo Calderon, the head of APAMEX, which for those of you who don't know APAMEX, it's the Mexican counterpart, if you will, to NEGA. Carlos Lopez Coelho of the Autonomous National University of Mexico, a poultry nutritionist and poultry producer. And then on my far left, Enrique Dominguez, head of the Mexican Pork Council. So I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves for about 2 minutes each. Tell people who you are. If one of you runs over 2 minutes, the next person is to take the microphone away. And then you continue, and then we're going to open it up for questions and answers. Rather than do formal presentations, what we want to do today is have you ask them questions. So start thinking about the questions while they're introducing themselves, and let's get rolling. Henry?
Thank you very much, Mr. Mustard. We are also pleased and honored to be invited here. I was presented, my name is Ricardo Calderon. I'm director executive of APAMEX. That's the Mexican Agricultural Product Supplier Association that is representing the trade organization, the trade companies that make maybe the most part of the trade of the grain, the bulk grain trade with the U.S. and overseas, as well as the companies that are related as service suppliers to this kind of trade. I mean warehousing, transporting, certifying, banking, all what is needed to make and to put this product in the in conformity with buyers here in Mexico. And we are also, of course, representing this sector, this branch of activity, faced to regulators and policy making as well. So in that sense, we are also trying to get a good idea and to have some kind of action, direct action of advocacy toward these activities in the Mexican environment, regulatory environment. So more or less, it's what, well, of course, we also make some communication actions that one of them maybe you have known as our Anel Forum, in which, well, all of the trading companies and stakeholders are come here to Mexico and have some idea of what the trade, bilateral or multilateral, could be for the Mexican markets. So, well, I took already my time and passed the mic to my neighbor.
Thank you, Ricardo. My name is Carlos Lopez. I am a veterinarian. I work at the University of Mexico City in the vet school. My background is in nutrition, poultry nutrition, with a master's studies in California, Davis, and a PhD in Mexico. I have been working very close related with the poultry industry since 1976. Our poultry science department works very close with the poultry industry, mainly trying to solve and to work together in research and development. For 9 years, I was in charge in Bachoco, that is the largest poultry producer company in Mexico and the second one in layer production. I was in charge to develop and research on poultry nutrition. And since 20 years ago, I own my own company with other guys, also in research, mainly for the companies that I related with the poultry nutrition area. Now, at the university, I am in charge of the research technology for the whole species and working very close with the CONACYT, that is the federal agency that gave the funds for research in Mexico. I appreciate a lot the invitation, and also it has been very useful for us, the conversation with all our college, and I am sure that for you, your stay in Mexico will be very happy. Have a very welcome and safe back home.
Thank you, Carlos. Enrique Dominguez, I have 20 years working for the Mexican Pork Producers. It's a real new organization. Before that, I was working with the National Cattlemen Association in Mexico City. And before that, I was teaching here in Guadalajara, and I was appointed director for the state cattle growers of the state of Jalisco. Presently, I participate in Consejo Nacional Agropecuario, this major umbrella for agribusiness in Mexico. And what I take care of is anything related with fair trade practices. I am part of the dealing with IFAP, International Federation of Agriculture Producers in Paris. And through them, I go to the WTO negotiations, not just representing Mexico, but this group as well. I think this, for more of you, I live in Juarez, Mexico, and we are suffering a lot of the problems all over there. And this is the third time I had a chance in the past 30 years to be with this group, and I'm real glad to find a lot of great friends. Welcome all of you, and I hope to have a successful meeting. Thank you very much.
So let's start. If there's anybody out there who has a burning question. And we do have a couple people with microphones. Where are the microphones, by the way? Hold up the microphones. There we go. Well, I have a question, if you don't, because this is a very good opportunity to put my good friends on the spot. If we look And this is for all three of you. I'd like all three of you to look at it from your sectoral standpoints. If we look at the integration of the Mexican and the U.S. market in fruits and vegetables, for example, we are seeing that Mexico is basically taking over avocado production, is pushing the Californians out of the business, and conversely, we're seeing that Washington and California are pushing Mexico out of the apple business, that we see each country doing what it does best and integrating the markets. We're starting to see that in grains. We're starting to see Mexico come into the durum wheat market, taking the durum wheat market in North Africa that traditionally had belonged to the United States. What trends do you see in terms of market integration in the poultry sector and the pork sector and pretty much any sector you want to address, Ricardo? Could you each take in turn a few minutes to give your perspective of what's next?
Okay. We have structural problems in Mexico related with grain and soybean, especially because we have additional costs over $40 that we had to pay when we import. In the long term, we are losing a lot of market for the livestock, in general speaking. And a lot of the Mexican industry that they produce, they are coming more dependable of the inputs from U.S. I would like to share with you the real brief the experience of the feed for ethanol. I think Mexico made a mistake to resolve for public policy the thinking that they will be dependable in grain. We lose a lot of money, 2007, 2008 in the past year, because the ability of the grain was not there and the price was too expensive. This kind of the problems, this is risk of the integration. They work in a different way. The other thing, and just for finish, is about the new cool rule or certification of the origin product. This kind of policy doing for one of the country, they really work against the integration. This is a more near experience can I share to you today.
Well, regardless to the poultry industry, for broilers, we have the same situation than the USA in order that we have a big companies, the three ones in Mexico. One is a Mexican company, and two of them are American companies, Tyson and Pilgrims. Talking about eggs is quite different. Most of the egg industry is in the Mexican companies. We have a very high egg consumption. Some people say that we are the number one. It's more than 320 eggs per people per year. And as you see in the breakfast, you have a very good choices to have an excellent kind of different ways to cook in the eggs. For meat consumption, we have a chance to grow. We are behind the United States. We are very close to 26 kilograms, and we can grow on that. We have different problems. One of them is diseases. We have some diseases that are not controlled in Mexico, like Newcastle disease, that it can limit our exportations. And we're very close with the border. Last year, there was some problems of Newcastle disease in California. It doesn't make any... It is not rare that it will happen. Another difference is the consumption of the Mexicans. We like a big bird, fresh, and with pigments. You can produce big birds, fresh, but you cannot produce pigments, because you can put that on the feed, but you cannot do that in the processing, because you have to do so many changes on that, that it's not possible to cover that. So this is a kind of protection for our industry and for our Mexican consumption. That's and also we have a good percentage of live birds that are on sale. It means that it goes to the farm, it keeps in storage, and somebody or big buyers go and buy, let's say, 100, 150 broilers, and they can send to its community. That's not happening in the United States. But where those are our customs, our culture, and that's the way that we eat, and that's the way that we're going to eat. Because my daughter goes with my wife to the market, and they buy over there. So that will be, in the future, I'm sure that it's going to be like that. We have a big chance to grow for beef, I mean for meat, and also we are partners. We need the American grains, and probably you don't need us, but we are our good buyer for you, and we're very close.
Well, since the trade in this case perspective, integration will go maybe in the sense of facilitating the trade more than it has been until now. And that's thinking in a fully implemented NAFTA right now. That means that we need also to advance and get along for some kind of multi-choice or for consumers, for users in Mexico to have the opportunity to have the best sources they could find in their feed inputs, in this case for the poultry, livestock and an egg production, or in the case of the industry also for inputs for corn processors, in this case, or oil crushers, oilseed crushers. We are trying in this sense to have a more integrated market, going towards regulatory harmonization, for example, and operations facilitation for the cross-border trade or shipments and importing and exporting, of course, improvements of the procedures that are now in place. All of that has to be also, of course, integrated into some kind of, and that could be maybe ambitious to think right now in a customs union, for example, and maybe in the long term, that could be a better way to have the integration and the trade flows getting along each other in both countries. That's what integration means to us, and we are focused and have as target to get the trade as free as it could be, and of course give the users in Mexico all the multiple choices or the best choices they can get for to be as competitive for the region and have a wider integration. In that sense, for example, we know that some Mexican regions could produce in a better way and a less expensive way for some of the users, maybe getting some bases that could be very accessible for them. And in change, we have other regions that could be very well supplied by U.S. that has been also a traditional source of supply for them. And that could be also very, very... you can say economic for them to have a competitiveness improvement, a continuous improvement toward making a region that could be, getting along with other regions that could be in the next future coming into the world markets such as the Mercosur and the former Soviet Union republics, for example.
I just want to reassure everybody that rumbling you hear out there is Ferromex hauling Iowa corn down here to Mexico. So it's nothing to worry about. Any questions from the audience? Yes, back here, please. And when you get the microphone, if you could identify yourself for the speakers, please.
I'm Pam Johnson, Iowa Corn, so I'm glad that's a freighter and not an earthquake. I have a multi-level question, I guess. How does Mexico view the United States ethanol industry? You made a comment about the price volatility back in 2008, but How do you view it now as friend or foe, and how can we work together so that it can be a friendly blend of food, feed, and fuel? And talk about access to distillers' dried grains or maybe new products that you could use in the feed industry.
I tried representing the Mexican consumer of the grain, for example, to try to deal directly with a farm from Iowa, Illinois, working with, especially with the Department of Agriculture from these both states. And I think because we need the grain, and we like your grain, but it's not we are not found a way to get it directly from the for the farmer. All the business is doing, they put us real far away. We would like to have, for example, my people or the people I represent, we buy 300,000 metric tons just per month. Okay, we would like to make a deal with the supplier, and reliable supplier, maybe 50% from U.S., maybe 50% from Mexico. Usually, we just use sorghum in this case, but this kind of effort, if we can work directly with you, with the farmers, we will be interested. But when we pretend to deal, we have problem with the baggage, we have problem with the transport rail, and the facilities and the Gulf, the control of the shipments. That's it's not way. I think if our government, they will help us to settle up a direct relationship between the consumer and you, the farmer, you will have more money and I will have better product and better service. This, we agree with you. About the fuel, I don't know, it's a lot of discussion producing ethanol with subsidized and taken from the grain, but you are oversupplied. We would like to be sure that the grain we need is there. And I'm sure that we can deal then, not just on a yearly basis, but in the future. We would like to have a reliable supply and price, and the best can be do for you, and the best can be for us. This is my point. Thank you.
Yes, in that sense, I agree with Enrique that it's needed to have, it will be better to have in Mexico some kind of competitiveness related to even the NAFTA countries. In this sense, I guess the markets are in some sense influencing each other in the terms of price basis and what could be the more competitive or the more accessible price for each of the users, depending on the region and the transportation and facilities they have to get the inputs, the feed inputs into their production lines. The one thing that maybe could happen with the energy or the ethanol production is to see how this availability in the U.S. could be affecting or influencing the markets, even in Mexico, and try to get along with that. We're watching the last years that the production, the availability for exporting is getting, in this year, not especially affected, but it could be a trend that the exporting lines will be maybe in the next future less available for, maybe not for all countries, but Mexico could be, and it's one of the targets, one of the goals for the Mexican industry to be in the preferred customer sense for U.S. producers and exporters. So I guess this integration of having the best possible and available grains from the main sources. It could be Mexican, it could be from the U.S., will be one of the main items and for the future and for the industry improvement and growth.
I have a short comment for a friend, and he told me, when you need grains, you want grains. And when you have those grains, very high cost, you are not happy. For any reason, the reason could be the full industry, but they want to be in the business with lower cost and high quality ingredients.
As you look ahead, I'm going to ask...
Could you identify yourself, sir, please?
I'm Wendell Shawman from Illinois, Western Illinois, pretty close to the Mississippi. Put a lot of grain on barges and send it down the river. I'd ask you to look ahead 10 years. We have a lot of activists in the United States that are challenging our meat industry, poultry, hogs, and beef to a lesser degree, on really making life difficult for them. Can you see, or would you plan ahead to try and be a country that would look ahead? Would your government be receptive? Would you put rules and regulations in to probably produce more meat as perhaps it becomes more difficult for our meat producers to survive in the some of the environmental and rules and regulations that may be placed upon them?
Well, talking about poultry, we are right now the fourth broiler fourth layer producer in the world, and the sixth one. So we have a good range in the worldwide situation. The question is if we are going to increase all depends on the international market. If we don't solve first our health situation, it will be not possible because other countries won't accept our products if we're still having some diseases. About regulations, I can talk about two kinds of regulation. One is the welfare regulations. We don't have too many right now, but we are going on that way. We're not going that because we don't export. Most of the welfare regulations are coming from imported countries. Mainly Europe, north part of Europe. That's happening with Brazil. Brazil, they are increasing their costs due to those kind of welfare regulation, more than environmental or other kind of regulations. Related to the environment situation, we have too much to do. There is not enough. We're doing something, but it's not enough. Mainly water, mainly disposable water, and mainly the manure. We're still using, and it's legally to use poultry manure to feed cows or beef. That's not possible in other countries. But if we put those regulations, that someday we will need to do it. I don't know what is going to happen. Because, for instance, talking about eggs, our cost of production is very close to 6 cents, American cents, per egg. In Europe, it's 50 cents of euro per egg, the cost to the consumer. So we have a population, infants, old people, very poor people that they have to eat. And I don't know if it's time to put regulation on in animals, on welfare, and to give a good food for our human population. I think that we cannot be competitive with the United States, I mean in cost of production, because we don't have the ingredients, we don't have the grains, we don't have the soybean. Those are the most important cost of production. I like your question because, how you know, Mexico is, 55, 60% of the economy is informal. We have about 50% of the people living below the
poverty line.
Poverty line. We have to change. We have to say change our regulations and the policy, public policy related with farms. We have a lot of potential over there. In terms of the livestock, what we are looking for is a compensation from the Mexican government because the cost of the grain. We pay to the Mexican wherever cost me bring from Chicago, Ukraine, even if I bring from Texas. Right now we are doing, special people from Nuevo León dealing directly with the farmers in South Texas and Oklahoma directly by contract. Better price for the farmer, better price for us. It's something we can do it. About the problem, the structure of the market, we don't have quality standards. It's a lot of products coming from U.S., grading number three, number four, or even with any grade, going real cheap to us, and they take over the Mexican market. The Mexican government allowed because it's the way the poor people has access to the food. But we have to change. We have to provide jobs, and farming in Mexico is producing jobs. We have to change. We have a really very good climate. We don't have any more the chance to send the people over the U.S. It's a big and huge wall right now, and we have to make this job over here. And we hope to change this policy. The Congress is working real hard, the administration, but it's, we have a fight inside. The policy to help the consumer, or like Brazil or somebody or like you, help to produce the product in Mexico. We have to create jobs in Mexico, not in and something else. It's like before we signed agreement with China, we have a balance, trade balance in favor of Mexico. Every single year, the past 2 years, we have against Mexico $37 billion. Billion, billion, 37 mil millones de dólares. I don't know what's. Yeah, $37 billion. We don't have this money. It's not more oil available. We have to change. You know, we don't, we have a lot of young people that they don't have the opportunity, and that's where the cartels, they are taking these kids and get increased the violence. We have to change. No, we cannot keep it this way going. And that's where we are working.
Well, since the grain trade in this case perspective, the regulatory environment in each of the countries that are in partners in NAFTA could not in any sense be incompatible in the future. That's what I was talking about, a regulatory harmonization process that's needed, of course, to have this free trade going. But not only that, only to have a certain certainty about what could be the plans for economic processes or integration or industrial or markets development in each of these countries. And of course, these plans could must have at least fixed horizons to know where they're going. So in that sense is why this regulatory harmonization and operations facilitation among the NAFTA partners is a must, and right now could be the next stage of integration that was of what Mr. Mosse was talking about.
Okay. Next question. Oh boy, let's not get so enthusiastic. Yes, one over here.
Good morning. My name is Richard Cortez. I live in Texas. I think it's very important that you recognize, and I appreciate what you're saying about your cost of living and your standard of living. And we saw a chart this morning that a lot of the world lives on less than $2 a day. A third of the world lives on $2 a day. And we struggle with these kinds of things that you're talking about in America. I think our average income in America is something around $45,000 a year per family. And you're talking about the grain price being too expensive. For us to produce that grain, it's got to be up here. And we need to help y'all in your country bring your standard of living up so they can buy the grain. We live on the same continent. And I think that's a lot of what NAFTA was intended to do, was to help us get to where everybody lived on the same standard so that it would be easier for trading between the two countries. And I don't know that you can create food at a price for people at the wages that they are. We've got to bring their wages up, not just create jobs. I'm staying in this hotel, and the cost of the room, if we were in America, they'd be paying these people $50, $60 a day to clean the rooms. I don't know what they're paying them here, but obviously I don't think it's what $50 or $60 a day. And so what I'm saying is we've got, if we're going to pay these prices, and when you charge these prices, there's something about your system, and I'm not being critical. We've got to bring those people up so they can buy your poultry and buy your swine and pork products. And I don't know what it is about the country that we can't bring that up, but with 26% of your people that was on the chart this morning like making less than $2 a day, it's going to be very difficult for them to buy the products that we need to sell. And I just think that we need to work together to help bring your standard of living and your economy up so that we can be more equal partners in trade and on society. Thank you.
Yes, for the first thing I can think about that could be maybe minimizing the cost added along the, you can say, the trade flows or the marketing flows from the U.S. to Mexican user. And much of them are coming from regulatory enforcement, for example, some of them also for operations, cross-border operations. Some of them could be for transportation, technical or economic, you can say, vices or disadvantages we can have here in Mexico. Also for infrastructure, maybe insufficiency. I guess all of that together could make a problem and a less competitive, in this case, Mexican industry. Of course, trying to enhance at least the first part of them will be the next step. And that's a thing that it's in our hands and can be done relatively quickly. That's why we're thinking about that next stage. But the industry, of course, has also its own point of view, and I guess they can say something about better ways to improve the flows and make us, and I mean with us, all the region, the North American region, as competitive as it must be.
I like your words, Mr. Ortiz, and I agree with you at all. And I think the challenge for Mexico, like any country, we really need to make improvements and up the standards of living. For us, we say that 26 or 22% is official people we have on the farm, but I can assure you it's about 50%, depending in one way or another, direct or indirect from the farming. But for the past 20 years, Mexico, we went to the grown way. We had to get back to the basics, to the farming. We have a lot of potential. We can create a lot of jobs there. We are working real hard with some of the branch of the system. We are bringing a lot of machinery, seed, fertilizers, and everything. But we have to resolve the policy we set up the price in Mexico. And we have to be focused and produce in Mexico, not somebody else. The experience with China, it was really bad because any chance we have to move the people to the city to work in the factory, this was canceled. We really lose a lot of jobs, over 3 million just in 2-3 years. But this is a political situation. Is we are working, will not be easier. Even the states or you, friends, or suppliers, they are really concerned and really appreciate the way you participate with us. Thank you.
Also, as Enrique said, I'm agreeing with you. And I think we have three big problems: education, nutrition, and jobs. We have to solve it, and we have to work on that. That's our problem, and it's a very important problem. Regardless to the consumption, first, I think that's a personal feeling, that we need to increase the consumption of the very nutrition for our population, even if we don't take care of the welfare situation, or even in some way we have to buy ingredients at very low quality in order to have a cheapest egg production or meat production. I don't want that will be a misinterpretation. We need good quality products in order to have a high quality production and efficiency production. We have to improve the jobs in the on the field, and also to increase in some way family or internal production. And after that, probably we have to think in growth. This is already done by the industry. They are doing a pretty good job. We have very efficiency production in some of the companies in Mexico, especially in swine and on broiler production and layer production. That's not the problem. The problem is education, nutrition, and jobs.
Before we go to the next question, I just want to throw out two quick factoids. And we've already heard one of them, that 50%, roughly 50% of the Mexican population lives below the poverty line, which you don't see in a city like this. But as someone who has traveled into the rural areas of Chiapas and Tabasco and up into Sonora, you see the rural poverty, you see the urban poverty when you go into the inner cities. And it's an issue that sooner or later the United States and Mexico together are going to have to work on. The other factoid I would give to you is that of this 50%, the bottom 10% of the Mexican population gets 85% of its caloric intake from eating corn-based tortillas. That is an astounding statistic and gives you an idea of the nutritional imbalance in this country. Again, it's an issue that sooner or later we and the Mexicans are going to have to work on. So the next question.
Hello. I'm Charles Ring with Texas Corn Producers Board, and I'm from 30 miles north of Corpus Christi, Texas. Now, I have, for the last 2 or 3 years, none of my product, corn or sorghum, has entered Mexico. Two reasons. Number one, we've been in a 2-year drought, and there wasn't a whole lot to send you folks. Now, I keep hearing over and over again about price, and whether it's Mexico or Korea or Japan, it's price. You know, there's no reason I can think of in my mind that I shouldn't sell my product to the highest bidder, whether it's Mexico or Korea or China or Japan, wherever. But my point here is, over the years, there's been quite a bit, and you mentioned going directly to the producer in Texas or Oklahoma or Illinois. There's been, over historically, a certain amount of financial risk involved with going directly. So therefore, a lot of our product goes through elevators or goes through commercial international vendors, if you want to call it that. You cut out those folks, then you put the risk on the producer. There's elevators in the state of Texas now that have gone out of business because they didn't get paid. Thereby, we didn't get paid. So my point is, I'm not sure that we can cut out that middleman that runs your price up. And what is there we can do to satisfy that market other than it's a bidding process, and you folks bid with Korea and Japan and everybody else. And we have to be assured that we get paid somehow. I'll leave it to you. Thank you.
Well, usually the Mexicans, we pay letter of credit, irrevocable letter of credit. It's a full guarantee. Sometimes, and maybe Alan can tell me, we import long time ago, that's when we started importing through support of the Commodity Credit Corporation, CCC. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're still available. Yeah. But it's a huge advantage for us. I think from you, from the your standard point, or your point of view, you have a full guarantee. That's for me, for example, made a deal for 30,000-40,000 tons. We buy by cheap 35,000-40,000 metric tons every time. And it's not a big deal. You have the guarantee you'll be paid. And usually, in this case, USDA to the CCC, they support and give a guarantee. But from now, I guarantee that when we buy from you, we give you letter of credit. Once you present your bill, your shipment note, the quality standard, certified, then you go to the bank and you get the money. It's really easy, but sometimes I understand it's difficult. And we let the business for somebody else. And they made a huge box from you and a huge box for us. It's something that we would like to have regulated. We know how much are you pay, and the price we pay is too high. Maybe we can split the difference if we find a way. I think it's the interest of the both governments to help up to build this relationship. Don't worry for the payment.
Well, yes, of course, our proposal, since the trade point of view could be, is to have a more, an improvement in sense of having a less costly operational transfer or trade or a bulk grain, supply to the Mexican users. In some sort of sense of having, of course, more defenses upon the volatility, for example, of prices, but having also some kind of basis negotiation with the users, with the customers in Mexico. I guess that could be also one of the ways we can handle this kind of situation, and to the future, having a more formal relationship through maybe contracts that could be having more being more that could be more specific in the price terms, the hedging it that you could use for to protect yourself and the customer with price variations, and of course the basis that could be agreed upon buyers and sellers. I guess this organization of the trade and the marketings could be one of the responses to have a more competitive and reliable system.
There have been so many, many years, more than 60 years, that we import high amounts of products from the United States. This is not new. Something that is new is the systems or the mechanisms available in order to do faster safety and easier this work. Okay.
Another question?
I'm Paul Bratney with the Value Add A Team, and I'm wondering if there's a way that we can enhance our product to better meet your needs, bring more value to you that you would be willing to pay a higher price for. If you could address your needs and willingness, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, well, if you get back 10, 50 years, the standards were higher than we have right now. We have a lot of problems with the supplier from U.S. or order, especially for South America, but sometimes we made a deal and we specified exactly what we want. It's not the same corn that when you send it to the chicks or send to the south than when you go to the last. We had a problem with this, the certification. Some companies, you are the better producer, but usually the firms that they marketing, they have to mix to make the volume, and then you can have a very good product. Other day is different, and we don't have the right. What's it? To handle the difference, because we would like to be certified when we receive the shipment, and because you want to be paid once your corn left the elevator, even before it crossed the border. This kind of the issues we are dealing directly with APAMEX, that they represent the mainly exporters to Mexico. And we have the counterpart of the Mexican consumers of grain. And we try to deal to figure out what is the best way to resolve these disputes, and because it's a private, it's not government. And I think between the private sector, we are working very well. Sometimes the supplier don't want to be certified for third party or something like that. But it's something we have to work. We know the products come from the farm, it's not with any problem, but once you have to make a volume, you have to concentrate a couple times before arrive to Mexico, that's a problem. And you can blame the transport, the elevator, whatever. Somebody has to pay for it. But presently, the consumer, are we fine? We would like to have find a way to have direct relationship.
Yeah, well, what maybe we're talking about is more strict control on, for example, toxins, mycotoxins that could be present. Another could be the integrity of grain, less broken. That means in this at destination, that could be also maybe controlled by the systems for drying and handling the grain. All of these connected processes improvement could also enhance greatly the adaptation or the user's preference in terms of conformity of the grain that he's receiving. In terms of composition, maybe the next future, of course, will be of enhanced products for oil contents and lysine contents. All of the nutritional factors or components that could be a plus for the Mexican user, and I guess in that sense, they could be even willing to pay an identity preserved distribution in terms of having a very, very selected feed input.
Yes, as Ricardo said, first, we use the grains for their nutritional value, not for the grains. When I use a grain, I have to take in account all of the nutrients that it gave me. As he said, lysine, methionine, vitamin E, so many things. And when there is the contract, it doesn't say anything about that. And something that is important, is the uniformity on the nutritional value of the product. It is closely related to the quality of the grain. If I have less variability, I can use less safety margin in my formulation. Then I have less cost, feed cost, and more efficiency on that. That will give me a big advantage in my work. And something that are very easy to do right now is, for instance, the infrared system, in order to take a sample, to make a lecture, to do the composition is very cheap. It's faster, very faster. And I can have a good idea of what I am using just before it arrives, or even in the origin. And if somebody can give me a lower margin on my main ingredients, that could be energy value or the main amino acids, then I will go and to choose that product. And it will be very useful for me in order to have a better formulation. I can do that in my plant. I can do it. There is no problem. But why I have to wait in order to take a decision on in order to adjust my budget in other ingredients and not to wait 2 weeks after to have that decision. Okay.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Doerr.
You just alluded to your desire to buy waste, perhaps.
Well, no, not exactly, but they are not opposite. I can have both the regulatory and the nutritional value. If I can have an infrared cost that will be probably $2 per sample, and I can have in 3 minutes in my office, it will help me, of course. Also, the regulatory that you have, that will be useful, but that will be an extra, and that was in order to answer the question.
I would like to, living in Chihuahua, we farming and grow cattle. Sometimes in the past, when my dad lives, we bought grain, feedstuff, by order. But what happened, not just for us, but for livestock, poultry in Mexico, in this part of Chihuahua, we experienced a lot of problems on the quality standards. In one way, they delivered real different products, and it's real easy because the animal respond real fast, and you know what it's doing. That's why we bought grain, soybean, and we decided to do it. Usually, even in Mexico, we prefer to have our own mixer, all our own plant, to buy from the third party. It was a real bad experience. And maybe lack of the regulation, and we had a problem. That's why we go directly by the grain and the soybean and keep the nutrients by yourself. This is something we have to work with the industry. But for now, thank you, senor.
We probably have time for about one more question. Is that about right? How are we doing on time?
I'm Julius Schaff, the Iowa Corn Promotion Board, and getting back to your question about buying direct from the farmers and then going to your neighbor, Charles Ring, and his discussion about, worrying about payments and trying to get the best value for grain that you can. I think that we could all learn a lesson from what U.S. farmers have been facing in the last 2 or 3 years. That's really come to light is that we're using risk management for our inputs. Our cost of fertilizer skyrocketed, our cost of petroleum and fuel that we use on our farms has skyrocketed, and it's been very volatile. And so we're using risk management now to try to control our inputs. We look for opportunities to lock in our inputs for the future that will allow us to raise our products at a profitable level. We no longer go from just-in-time purchases. We look to the future and look for opportunities to lock in our inputs. And I think that's one thing that it's going to have to happen all over, and it is happening all over the world, and I know you're very astute to this, is risk management. There have been opportunities in the grain prices in the last few months that you could have locked in a much lower price. So volatility is here with us to stay, and I think rather than hoping that you can ever buy it directly from a farmer, that's been an age-old quest, but your best chance is to look for those market opportunities when you can lock in those prices for longer term and hold your costs down and meet your production costs that you can make a profit on. Latch on to those opportunities when they're there. You know, every opportunity you get, because the market is going to be volatile. It will offer those opportunities to you. Take advantage of them when they come. And the Grains Council will be a great place to help you if you need some help with those things. Thank you.
Yeah, in that sense, I agree totally with you. And you can say, the change in Mexico has been going from forwarding to making contracts with futures hedging, futures and options hedging. I guess this mixture could be also precisely a solution to financing the trade or the supply for the Mexican users, as well as some credits that are well ongoing. Some of them official, some of them commercial credits that can be used, and that they are usually available by the Mexican trade, or in this case the exporters.
I want to say thank you to your organization, because I don't know, over more than 20 years, this organization produced a lot of the seminars to go to with Chicago Board of Trade to deal. I think your money of your checkoff, training the Mexican buyer to buy from you through all the. Mercantile change. That's very good. I think it's one of the projects, and I really recognize, and I really, this labor that you do it and still doing in Mexico, it's really appreciated. We are better buyers thanks to you guys. Muchas gracias.
Well, thanks also. I think that, well, we don't have an organization like you have it. We haven't received too much support as you have given to us. And one dream could be that we could have someday a Mexican grains organization together with the USA, taking your example on your organization. Thank you very much.
I'm told must agree to that. Well, thank you. That only also to thank the U.S. Grains Council for his invitation, for the invitation to this meeting, one of the maybe most special you have had in the history, and put us available for whatever the next future and the long-term future will present to all of us in the development of a Mexican, North American, and the Canadian competitive region.
I'm told we do have time for a few more questions. We're doing okay on time. Are there more questions?
I'm David Howell, a corn farmer from Indiana. It seems to me that we've had a very frank discussion going both ways. Been no red faces to speak of. And that's a sign of what good friends do. We talk back and forth frankly, and work on our problems. I want to go back to what I think. It's been hard to hear back here with Iowa corn going through. Back to the beginning, the first question I thought from Wendell up front, I think I had a similar observation. In the States, we're having a lot of pressure on our livestock industry. we're getting crowded by the urbans and the farmers as well, and it may not survive as we know it. Now, this is kind of a pessimistic approach to the problem, but I wonder if it's not an opportunity for the Mexican farmers and society in general. The question, we're neighbors, we're as close to transportation, we're afraid that it'll go to Mexico or to Brazil or someplace else in the world. It seems logical from the big picture point of view that if we're going to lose it, we ought to give it to our neighbors that are our friends to work with and save our transportation for our grains and so forth. I guess my question is, can you gentlemen, as representatives of Mexico, can you get the Mexican economy ready to assume meat production for a lot of the United States needs? And in doing that, it seems to me it'd be a tremendous opportunity for your country to right yourself economically and solve a lot of these problems that we've been bantering back and forth about here for the last 40 minutes. Observation, no direct challenges. I just would like to hear what you say.
Who wants to go first? Enrique, I think that question best started by you.
It is a structural problems related with trade issues. Then what happened if we remove the border? This is maybe the bottom line. When we start dealing NAFTA agreement in 1991, the people were thinking then it will be real close what it was happening in Europe. But this time, they were 12 countries, 12 cultures, 12 language, and they fixed the way to be organized. In North America, we were 3 countries. For us, maybe it's not right, but we see Canada and the States real close because your background, cultural background, and we are the difference. And then we expect to be integrated in the way it was those times, Portugal, Spain, and Greece. Then they were less developed. And we see over the years how the community really helped to support and create the infrastructure that they needed. What happened here, from the Mexican standpoint, we opened the borders next day of the NAFTA. We do a lot of facilities for import, but we experience a lot of the problems to get into the States. We just export drugs, marijuana, coke, and people that they lose the jobs in Mexico. You know, I am exaggerated, but that's the way the people feel. We lose jobs. And why we can export drugs and everything else, but we had problems to export products. Yeah, I just think we would like to take off because Alan reminded me about the vegetables and tropical fruit. But in general matter, the experience for Mexico was bad. And we are the only responsibles. It's not because the way you do business is the way we are organized. And it's a full responsibility from the Mexican that we have to do it. And I think this kind of association, like farmers that produce the product I need, we can create a positive relationship to help to get back the Mexican track. We are not doing great. We don't see take at the bottom. That would take long. We have not have a finance sector. We don't have banks for the past 15 years. And the banks left is not in Mexican hands. And they don't care about the farming. We pay 450 or 500 percent more than you pay for interest. We have 15 years almost with any investment. We see firms going to Mexico like Smithfield. They have the large operation very well and really high productivity in Mexico. It's a lot of opportunities. But we have to make our homework here. And real fast, even, we can come towards. Gracias.
Yes, we have the technology. For instance, we export specific pathogen-free antigen X that is the high top quality for human vaccines production in Europe, particularly to France. So we can do it. In the high industry levels, we're very high competitive. Looking at the Agristat, the top five, in the top five is the area that is Canada, United States, and Mexico. Usually there is a Mexican company in the top five. So we are doing all those regulations, some company can do it if somebody is going to pay for that, as the Brazilian are doing and somebody's paying for that.
Yeah, for sure. And well, I agree with Ernesto that we are on our way to have a very competitive edge in some of these agricultural products, agri-food products, I can say, even the more extended way. And one of them, also, but that not very usually mentioned, is that the feed industry, the feed mills in Mexico, is also one of the most developed industries around the world. And that's a sign, and it's also that good light that we have some development in the sense of being competitive and get along with the U.S. And Canada and having a more, you can say, integrated region without hurting each other and being, to the contrary, more competitive face to the world.
Another question. Okay, Eric.
I'm Eric Erickson with the U.S. Grains Council staff. U.S.-Mexico agricultural trade is one of the great success stories. And one of the recent successes has been the rapid growth in U.S. exports of DDGS. Mexico is now, I believe, our number one customer for distillers grains. We also consider that our exports of distillers grains will need to expand considerably in coming years. I wonder if you could comment on the prospects for the poultry industry and the swine industry for absorbing and using additional quantities of distillers grains.
And we saw the special the dairy farms, they are doing very, very well. And the DC going to feedlots in the same way. But the experience we have from the beginning with the industry was real. They were real bad experience. I think we start using 11% in the ration and then go to 20. And finally, we decide to remove it. We know the new factories, we say by those days, any single batch is real different. There's no way you can play. And the supplier, it was a lot of problem. I think because for big cattle and dairy industry is doing very well. I know a few large farms of poultry, they try it, but with bad experience. Because it's like a real difficult to keep the standards. One of the challenge we really have, we try to be better to you and the nutritionists and really care about the quality of the input. And that's why we have a huge concern. And DDS for poultry and swine was not a good experience. Few farms still using. I know the feedlot, they use it, but they never told you. And they replace for other products. But it's a potential, yes. I hear the new plants, they have more standardized the quality, and right now they are in ability to provide a certification. But the bad experience, the people is going real, real careful. It's a potential, yes.
Yes, I'm seeing that besides the variability in the product, there is the variability on the available of nutrients availability. There is a big range. And also, I think that something that will be useful is to study the effect of enzymes or additives that could improve the nutritional value, mainly on DDGs. There is a lot of information on soybean, there is a lot of information on corn, milo, but there is very few information on DDGs, and the products are available. The suppliers are interested to prove that, and the consumers, they want to have a better product. Mexico is using that already now. Some people are using between very close to 5%. Some of them close to, for egg production, very close to 7%. Particularly, we have tried that for 14% inclusion in a high challenge. And there is the response is not good, but it's too much, 14%. We know that it's too much. But once we use some extra enzymes on that, particularly proteases, the effect is improved. So there's a nice way to go.
Well, we were wondering about that, if price factor could also be important in deciding or choosing the ingredients for feed in Mexico. And if the price ratio with other competitors or substitutes is accessible, well, in favor of choosing it, that will be maybe one of the improvements or the supports for its demand. Even though I have some statistics here that. Show that the DDGs have been increasing, no matter even of the industry consumption decrease, the feed and industrial use in Mexico deflected in 2009, but the DDGs imports increased, maybe not in the same trend and the same pendant as the previous years, but it increased, although, and that seems to be the trend that will be keeping well until the demand could stabilize in the next future, I guess. But for the moment, it's getting a wider acceptance, maybe in other sectors, other than poultry and swine production. But I guess it could be also a good choice if having those combination of standardization, price price building, and maybe in the next future also some hedging with it.
Well, we all know that our mothers told us that you can call us anything, but don't call us late for dinner or lunch. I know it's getting close to that hour. Shannon, is it about time to wrap it up? All right. I ask that you please give a round of applause to our panel. I think they did an outstanding job. Thank you all very much.